The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Scientist Show, show 142, Thursday, 31st January 2008. To the Media Centre Show with tech.co.uk. I'm Ian Dixon, and this week on the show is the final set of interviews from CES. I had a great interview with James Kendrick and Kevin Topol from JK on the Run and the Mobile Tech Roundup podcast. And James and Kevin cover the world of mobile tech, and we chatted about the latest developments, including mobile internet devices, MIDs, UMPCs, Kevin's Asus EPC, and how mobile technologies, things like WiMAX and data cards, are enabling you to stay connected while on the go. James explains how he was live blogging from CES with the HTC Advantage, and how, you know, he was getting pictures up there straight away from the show. Even while he was doing interviews, he had the interview picture. In fact, while we recorded this interview, James got the picture straight up there. So it's interesting to hear their take on it, and they do a great podcast as well, so I'll include a link for that in the show notes. And then the final set of interviews comes from the Media Centre Show dinner we had at CES, towards the end of CES, the night before I left. And I caught up with Ted Singh from Embedded Automation, Adam Finch from One Voice, Jessica Zahn from Microsoft, Paul Hetlinger from S1 Digital. There are even a couple of home server MVPs there to chat to as well. So there's pretty good interviews. I have email and news items. So welcome to the show. I'm going to start with the email, and also thank show sponsors tech.co.uk. Just click on the link in the show notes and have a look at their site. It's a great site. So first to an email. Hi Ian, thanks for a great show. If you haven't already publicised it, fans of WebGuide may be interested to know there's a new version for Windows Home Server. And he sent me the URL, askexpress.com/webguide/homeserver.axpx, and I'll include a link for that in the show notes. Thanks for the email, Alan. I know we've talked about WebGuide plenty of times on the show in the past, and Microsoft was showing it at their booth at CES, and I mentioned WebGuide before, but I haven't mentioned the server version, so I'm going to have a look. I've not actually tried that. I'm going to have a look at that myself. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that, whether you've used the home server one. I certainly used the one installed on my Media Center PC. So thanks for that email. Now a top tip from Craig. It says, hi, Ian. Just listen to your podcast. You mentioned earlier on that deleting a certain file seems to speed up your system, but you lose some Siri settings. I've never done this, but I did notice the Siri settings view in Media Center, there is an option called Delete Recorder History. This deleted about 5,000 old program entries from my system. It probably cleaned up the file you were talking about without losing anything else. I just thought I'd mention it in case you hadn't seen it before. Cheers, Craig. Thanks for email, Craig. That's a really good top tip. I hadn't played with that button, hadn't tried that. And you're probably right, it does clear out parts of that file that I cleared manually. So that is a good tip, and it's probably worth clearing out every now and again. So for that tip, you win a copy of Big Screen Headlines 2, the RSS reader for Vista Media Center. So thanks for that. Great tip. Now finally an email about the RSS feed for the show from Hubert. Hi, a long time listener of the show. I started with number 5 of your original show. I wanted to point out something that I observed with the RSS feed for your show. I'm using my.yahoo.com as a homepage and my RSS aggregator, certainly one of the more popular systems for that purpose. Shows that I'm interested in, including yours, have a little window on the homepage filled by their RSS feed. The window, which I can't resize manually, normally contains a link and a brief description of the last 2 or 3 shows. What's different on your show is the RSS feed only shows the very last show, not much of a problem, but practically all the window is taken up by the stationary text that's not really informative and doesn't belong in an RSS feed. By Ian Dixon, Vote for the Show, Podcast Alley, etc. Just a suggestion, you have great content for every episode. Make sure your RSS feed concentrates on the content, not the statutory stuff like subscribe here links. Really enjoyed your CES videos, especially the interviews. Keep up the good work, Hubert. Thanks for the email. I really do appreciate getting feedback. And it's good to know that you've been listening since show number 5. That's brilliant. Starting this week, I've changed the layout of the show page. Basically, the RSS feed just picks up whatever I put on the blog post for the show, and I normally have the links at the top and then the description. So for starting from this week, I've moved the description to the top and have the links below them, and then the show times, which if you've not seen that, it actually breaks down each segment of the show by times. I'm going to have that below the main links. So hopefully that will work better for you and for other RSS readers. I noticed it in the Zune software, it's better if the text is at the beginning. So I'm going to do that change starting from this week's show. If anybody has any problems with it, please let me know. I'd like to get your feedback on that. The email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Please keep them coming in. I'll have another winner of email of the week next week. So now to a couple of news items. I saw an interesting new plugin on Missing Remote, and I'll quote the post. It says, "Viewer play your DV collection stored in a movie collector on your TV with Media Center Organizer. For the new year, Media Center Organizer has been updated again with a new look and features. The main menu has a simple covers with horizontal scrolling. A text-only menu has been added, and you can play all supported Media Center video formats." So it sounds really good, actually. It's kind of an alternative to My Movies, which is still very popular, but it's nice to have some choice. So I'll have a look at that, and hopefully we can talk about that with them on a future show. Last week I picked up a new gadget, a new universal remote. Now I've got loads of remotes lying about, and I've got my AV receiver and my Media Center PC remote, which I use to control the Xbox. I've got the TV control, and I've got the Xbox controller. So they're kind of all over the place. So I tried out Over One's new Digital 12 remote. So I got it set up to work with my TV. That was just a case of entering the device code, which comes in the manual. There's a whole list of device codes, or you can go through the website and just put your manufacturer in. So I got my TV working. The next thing I set up was my Denon receiver, my AV receiver. And there was just one code for Denon, and that worked fine. So the final element I wanted to set up was a connection with the Xbox 360. In the manual, there was a code for the original Xbox, not for the Xbox 360. So it wouldn't control it. It's got a learning mode, so I used that and learnt all the main functions, and I used my Media Center remote to do that, so I learnt all the transport controls and the guide button. I set the power button to be the learn from the green button and so on. So I could basically control Media Center from this remote control on the Xbox. And one interesting thing it's got on there is called a home theater mode, and that basically enables you to mix and match the controls from the setups that you've got already. So I set up the transport controls, the play and the pause and everything, to be controlled by the Xbox 360, but the volume controlled by the Denon receiver. So when you've got the remote and you're sitting there and you want to pause and turn it up and control Media Center, it can all be done without flicking between the different modes. There's a LCD screen where you can choose your modes, TV or Xbox or whatever. But in home theater mode, you can combine the functions of the various modes, and I must admit it worked really well for me. So I want to watch TV through a Media Center, I can just use the one remote, and I get the AV control, receiver controlled by the volume controls, and I get the pause and play and everything else controlled by the transport controls. So it works pretty well. And there's also macro buttons as well. So I set a macro button to switch the TV on into the AV mode so it can play the 360. I got it to turn on my AV receiver, turn down the volume on the TV, and then set it all up basically to watch from Media Center. The one problem I did have is it wouldn't turn the Xbox 360 on, which is really strange. I'm not quite sure why. But if I press the green button on my Media Center remote, it turns on the Xbox 360 and puts it in Media Center mode. Even though I learned that function, the remote doesn't switch it on, but if the Xbox is on, pressing the button that I learned from the green button does perform the action of the green button. So it's really strange. I've not quite worked that out yet. So maybe I should try it with a proper Xbox 360 remote control. So maybe that'll work better. And I set a button there also to turn the TV and the receiver off. So I've kind of got things automated there. And it's a nice sort of black-looking, very shiny black-looking display with a two-line LCD where you can name the devices, so I've set up Xbox and receiver and whatever. So the real test is whether the family members will use it and how long we keep using it without going back to the remotes. And I must say we've done pretty well with it so far. My wife quite likes it, actually. She never really got into watching TV and controlling it through the Xbox 360 controller, which I used to use, because I'm never having much luck with the media center remote, but just the way that things are in the room, it just seems to bounce around and the signal and never control it just exactly as I want it. But this does work, and I'm quite pleased with it. And as of today, we're using that all the time. Pricing $39.99, but there are other options available. This is the top of the range one. So have a look at link in the show notes, and I'll let you know how I get on with it. Now, it was great posting in the forums about asking how users are integrating Windows Home Server and Windows Media Center in their home setups together, and I was interested in this to hear how people are using those, because we talked about the problem before of Home Server and Media Center not integrating together out of the box, and there is the thread on the forums of how to get recorded TV onto Media Center. But I was interested to hear how people use it in general. So previous to having Home Server, I scored everything on my Media Center PC. But since getting a home server, I've been moving some content over onto it. But I'm interested in hearing how listeners and readers to the blog are doing that. I mean, I've got things like laptops and sound bridges. Do you point everything to the home server and move everything over? Or do you use it all in Media Center and just use home server as a backup tool? So I posted a question on the blog and asked Terry from wegotserve.co.uk, the home server blog, and he posted the same question. And Philip Churchill on the Windows Home Server blog responded as well. He said there's a new plugin coming out called Recorded TV Manager, which is a Windows Home Server application that handles the synchronization and moving the content over. It's so it's designed for Windows Home Server, priced at $24.95. A link for that in the show notes. But let me know what you think. Do you store all your content on the Home Server and some of it on Media Center, or do you move some of it around manually? I'm interested to hear what you think on that one. Chris Lanny had an interesting post up this week about the problems that Microsoft will face if Blu-ray wins in the HD battle. And it boils down to the fact that Microsoft has betted on HD DVD, and it's the interactive layer that's the problem, not so much the disc format, because Blu-ray uses Java interactivity. And for Microsoft to fully support Blu-ray on the Xbox, they're going to have that Java into the Xbox 360 or into Media Center. And Chris is talking about native support, not third-party add-ins. I saw Arcsoft's Total Media solution at CES, which you can see in the Cutting Edge Blu-ray video that I took at CES. And that's really nice and nice, but it's semi-integrated, and obviously it's a third-party add-on, and that's not going to work on the extender. So Chris seems to think that streaming HD DVDs may have been built into the next version of Media Center, and that could kind of be wasted effort now. So have a look at Chris's post in the link for that in the show notes. It's pretty interesting comments that Chris posts. Of course, I think it's almost inevitable that downloads is going to be the future. I think Media Center needs some kind of video downloads function. I love Xbox Live, the way that the video content works in there, but I want it in Media Center and then to be able to consume that via an extender. And finally, I wanted to mention a new blog by Ray Casey. Ray's joining the digitallifestyle.com with a new blog called the Media Center in Aviation and Marine blog, and he's going to be focusing on Media Center in a marine environment. There's a lot of potential for this with home automation and touch screens and the ability to expand the system where the budgets for sort of these high-end yachts is pretty impressive. So it's going to be interesting to follow that. Link for Ray's blog in the show notes. Right, now time for a break, and I'll be back with James and Kevin.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MC Each Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Okay, so coming towards the end of the week, and I've got James Kendrick and Kevin Tovell here with me, and it's been a busy show, and you've been covering loads of stuff, and what's impressed me most is how you've been covering the stuff. But before we talk about that, Kevin, just tell us some of the things that you've seen that you think are cool and some of the things that you think are going to be coming out that are going to be cool.
Sure, that's a good question, Ian. The big kick here that I've seen is WiMAX, the connectivity. Intel is really big on WiMAX, and for good reason, because they want to use those embedded WiMAX chips that they're coming out with later this year. So connectivity has been a key driver that I've seen. It's unfortunate to me that we may here in the U.S. anyway see a slow rollout, based on my take, of the WiMAX. So mainstream consumers, I don't think they're really going to see that this year. I have a feeling it'll be 2009.
So just explain to what WiMAX is.
WiMAX is it's the 802.16 standard of wireless connectivity. And according to Intel, we went to the ASUS and Intel and Sprint press conference the other day. They said that the coverage range is good. It's like 2K to 10K in an urban area and up to 50 kilometers in a rural area, which is fantastic. So in a sense, it's kind of like 3G here in the United States, which we do have fairly nationwide at this point by some carriers. But the difference is that they can embed that right on their chipset.
Yeah. So. And what's the mobile carrier's reaction to this? Because this is kind of, I could see this cutting into their business model.
Well, it would, except they need the carriers to roll it out. And they... Sprint is the big player with their Zome network, and they're doing trials right now.
So you still pay through your carrier, it's just a different delivery mechanism.
It's a different delivery mechanism, and they'll still have 3G, but they will also have WiMAX.
Yeah. I saw the
speed collection mechanism, though.
Yeah,
right.
Which is what it's all about for them.
Right, it's all about the money.
Yeah. So, I mean, I saw the demo where they were using on the Intel stand of the remote control cars, and it was quite cool to see that. But I guess it's kind of the stuff that you're doing here, where you're blogging live video and live pictures and those kind of things, where that would be, kind of technology would be useful.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you want to talk about how we've been blogging?
Yeah.
Well, sure. Yeah, basically we decided we wanted to find a way this year differently to bring our readers directly into the booth with us. And that's hard to do because you can't walk around, you know, filming video of everything you do. Because you would never be able to post it anywhere because your files would be massive, right? So settled on using the HTC Advantage, which is a Windows Mobile 6 equipped pocket PC. It's a very unique device, if you may have seen it. It's actually like a mini clamshell laptop, basically. But it's got a 3-megapixel camera and full 3G capability. So we got to thinking about that, saying, well, let's find a way where we can, for example, what we've been doing is we'll go into a booth, we'll see an interesting device that we want to pass on for our readers. We snap the picture, and within 10 seconds, it's posted up on the website.
That's cool.
Straight from the booth, using the 3G capability, and it's been just awesome. The response that we've gotten is just overwhelming. I mean, everybody's very, very, and the booth people too. It's impressed them to death. In fact, today actually, we stopped in the Samsung booth and we're looking at some stuff. And I actually was sitting down at they had a kind of a stationary display of the Samsung Q1
Ultra Premium
UMPC. Yeah. And I was sitting in front of that. What I didn't realize is that they were, you know, beaming the screen to a screen over my head. Okay. So Kevin is standing there looking at it. He says, "Hey, look at that." And it really blew the Samsung reps away because it was actually showing, because I had gone to our website to see to pull up on the screen to take a picture of the last post I had just done seconds before.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to demonstrate to the guy how fast this worked. And everybody was seeing that. Everybody was walking by going,
hey, how do you do that?
You know, it's live. And so it's pretty cool. So it's been really good. And that's the HTC Advantage has been well, I mean, very, very productive for that. We've been very happy with that.
That's available in the UK. And
it's available. It was available there first, right. Actually. No, it's available as the Advantage, too.
I'll take a picture, so I'll include this on the blog post with it. Mm-hmm. But it's a very neat-looking device, and it's...
5-inch screen.
Yeah, I mean, it's not much bigger than, say, you know, a PDA from a couple of years ago that was, you know, not even 3G. But what's the screen resolution? Because it looks pretty clear.
VGA.
Yeah, VGA. That's
VGA,
pretty good.
VGA. When it's Mobile 6, like I said, so it's instant on.
Yeah.
And it's very long battery life. I haven't killed it yet, and I mean,
one of the other things, the other ways you could do it, I guess, is using a mobile PC or, you know, like the OQO or a Sony. What made you pick that over going with Windows?
Look at it. It'll fit in my pants pocket.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, plus it's the instant on and the battery life and all that stuff. I mean, yeah, I could actually have done that with my HP 2710p tablet. I thought about that. And that's when it hit me, wait a minute, why would I do that when I could use this nice...
Yeah, because you don't need the complexity of...
Small handheld device. And this is also nice because it's got this detachable keyboard, which actually is a very innovative magnetic... I don't know if you've played with this one. Have you played with one?
No, I haven't, no.
It's just magnetic closure.
Yeah.
And it's very, you know, just very versatile, and it's worked really well. I've been very pleased with it.
So do you think we're going to see it? Has there been any sort of devices you think that might supersede that for your usage? Or
there's always another device.
Yeah.
There's always another device. I'm sure there will be eventually.
It's good they don't sell things here.
Yeah. It's good for my wife they don't sell things here.
I wouldn't be able to come if they sold stuff here.
And on the tablet PCs, anything that you've seen there that sort of took your fancy?
Well, I mean, got to see, spend a little more time with the HP TX 2000, which is refreshed from their TX 1000, which was announced at this show last year.
Mm.
And the main difference with this new version, it's very similar in form to the old one, which was pretty nice. But the main difference with this one is it's now got a dual digitizer. The TX 1000 suffered greatly from a very poor inking experience because it was touchscreen only, and it just didn't work well at all. HP listened to all the complaints that they got, and put they still have a very light touch digitizer, but now there's also an active digitizer, and it's a really good tablet PC.
And the nice implementation factor there is that when the tablet senses the pen, the digital pen, it turns the touchscreen off.
Oh, so if you just want to close a program, so hit your finger, but use a pen and inks.
That's right. So you and I've actually played with this at HP a few weeks ago, and I was pretty impressed with it. It's the touch experience is well implemented, and yet it's also and it's now a good active inker. You know, so and that's been here everywhere, and it's pretty good. That's probably it. There's not a lot of tablet PC stuff.
From Toshiba.
M700 is out new.
It's bulky and big, though.
It's a little big. It's a nice tablet. It's a nice notebook, but it's a little big. And you know, as I am like you are, Ian, I like my 2710p from HP because it's so thin and light.
Yeah, you can't. I mean,
you can't beat it, and that's already been out, so that's like not announced here. So. That's about it, though, on the tablet PC front.
And what about the mids? Are the mids a space?
Kevin go for the mids.
Are the mids a device looking for a market, or are they a market that's there?
No, I don't know if it's a device looking for a market. I think the UMPC concept that we've had for the last 2 years has really started this initiative. It might not have gotten us to where we want to be, but without the UMPCs 2 years ago, I don't know that we'd have the mids today. And I was just saying last night, we really already had a mid or a mobile internet device out already when you look at the iPhone. It's mobile. It has internet connectivity.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of a mid is to have that connectivity and instant access to pretty much the information that you want.
So we've already had a MID, and it's been successful here in the U.S., not so much overseas, as you and I were just talking last night, Ian, about because of the price.
Yeah.
But the MIDs that we've seen here, similar concept to that iPhone. Not a phone, but a small handheld device, either running Linux from Red Flag, or even the Toshiba concept MID has Windows Vista on it with a custom interface.
Right. So I've not seen that. I'll have to go and check that out.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure about the MIDs, whether it's, you know, do you want to carry another device? Because if you can use an iPhone or you can use a Windows smartphone, mm-hmm. and then you're going to carry another MID that's connected to the internet, is it another data plan you're going to need? Is it another device you've got to carry around, another charger?
Sure. Good question. And you know what? It gets us back to the WiMAX, because all of these are based on the Intel Menlo platform. And I have a feeling that's where they're heading. They're heading for WiMAX and all these devices. So you have your connectivity.
Without another plan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you raise a good point, because, well, if it doesn't have phone features, you still will have this as a secondary device.
Mm.
So I don't know, you know. I like having one device in my Apple iPhone, for example. I have my phone. I also have my internet connectivity. I don't know how the public is going to respond to a non-phone device with a good browser, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. How about the Nokia?
The NHN?
I think the Nokia stuff is doing quite well. So
it is.
So maybe that, I think they've kind of, we're very early into the game.
We are, and just toured their, yeah, we literally just came from the Nokia booth, and we have played with the N800s and seen the N810s now. I wonder, though, I agree with you, they are successful, but are they successful only in a techie, geeky kind of, you know, market? Not mainstream just yet, I don't think. But.
So James has posted here a picture of me doing the interview now, and that's live.
It's already live on the blog.
Well before I get this edited in it.
Sorry, we beat you to the punch there.
Yeah, you definitely did. That's cool. And I want to ask you about the origami experience too, but before I get to that, I notice you've got the Asus there with you, and you've been talking about this a lot, and I think this is kind of your favorite toy.
It's my new baby. Yes.
Yeah.
This is the Asus EPC, the $399 version here in the United States. I guess it's called the 4G Surf model. It's not that 4G. No. It does come with Xandros Linux, but right before the show, I had to put XP on it in lieu of Linux. And that was simply because my EVDO card, the drivers weren't there in Linux.
Right.
But I've covered the entire show. Every blog post I've written has been on the EPC.
Just feel the weight of that.
Mm-hmm. It's about 2.02 pounds.
Yeah, it's lighter than the tablet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lighter than the tablet. Now, you're limited by the 7-inch screen, 800 by 480 resolution. But again, not for long. Asus is going to have a 7, 8, and 8.9-inch screen model. Second quarter of this year is what we were told. And they're going to bump the resolution on at least some of the models up to 1024 by 600, making it much more usable. So
yeah, it's a nice. It's the first time I've seen it in person. It looks nicer, and it is the kind of thing you can throw in the bag and take with you.
Absolutely.
And we should point out, you know, that availability of the WiMAX and the larger screen.
Yeah.
It's been appearing on a lot of websites today, actually, and yesterday, that's not going to happen for 18, 20 months or whatever. That's we were told next month by the CEO of Asus.
Right.
So I think next quarter. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Next quarter, right. By the CEO of Asus, I think. We'd probably take that to the bank.
I would say so. It's what's interesting is this device has no hard drive in it either.
No.
It has 4 gigabytes of flash memory on board. So it's pretty zippy.
You had to put XP on for the data connection.
Mm-hmm.
If you hadn't had to have done that, or if you didn't need to change over and the data was compatible with Linux as well, would you have done that?
Oh, I would have done that. And actually, for the first month that I've had this, I was using the standard Xandros Linux distro that they had on here. And in fact, by changing two lines in one of the scripts, I was able to get my AT&T HSDPA modem working fine. Unfortunately, right before the show again, I switched. I left AT&T and went to Verizon due to coverage issues. And as soon as I did that, I had no driver support. Mm. So, but I would have. It was very usable with Xandros Linux.
Yeah, so you could have done everything that you're doing here.
Absolutely, because everything, you know, we're working in the cloud. Everything is being done online. And Firefox was already pre-installed in that Xandros distribution. And no difference, you know.
Mm.
Would not have impacted me one bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there's must be alarm bells ringing at Microsoft.
Well, that's not my fault.
No, yeah,
I'm not ringing them. Something about that this morning.
Yes.
They better be paying attention and be getting really concerned right now.
You know, yeah. You just pointed this out, and talking about the future and what are we going to see this year, I think this is the year of Linux really coming mainstream. And it's for devices, because of devices like this and the usability of them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, the mini win or whatever, you know, concept that they're working on for Microsoft, that's going to have to come fairly quick, but it's not going to come quick, is it?
I doubt it would come quick, but it needs to be light.
Yeah.
It needs to be light. It can't be a bulky.
See, they've got Windows CE. Do you know, I think Windows CE could be, you know, with a bit of investment and a bit of user interface work, could certainly power a device like that.
Well, you've got to remember that the Windows Mobile product line that Microsoft produces, it probably follows a 5-10 year project schedule. Mm. I don't believe that they can react, you know, quickly enough.
Mm.
And let's face it, Linux is pretty powerful. I mean, you know, Linux is a full alternative operating system to Windows. And what's happening with these cheaper, you know, devices that's catching consumers' attention and saying, wow, that's only, like in the case of the Asus, that's only $399. I'm going to go trade it. And we looked at some yesterday, it's going to be $299 or $399 as well, CloudBook with Linux on it. So what's happened, and I believe, is that a lot of mainstream consumers who know nothing about Linux and would never be thinking about Linux or would be willing to try Linux in the past is saying, $400 notebook, I'll try Linux.
Yeah.
And they're discovering that it's pretty good.
Yeah. You know? I mean, they don't care it's Linux. They don't care it's just easy $400 and works.
I mean, the distro of Linux that's on the EPC, as Kevin demonstrated to me, is awesome for new users. It's rock solid. It's simple to pick up and just start using. And that's all people really want to do. I'm not talking about geeks like you and I. We like to tweak stuff, you know, and we like to squeeze out maximum performance. I'm talking about people who, you know, like my aunt or my sister, who they just want to take it home and take it out of the box and just start doing stuff they need to do. That's all they want to do. And people are now seeing that Linux can do that. And that's why I was kind of firing off a little warning shot to Microsoft today. You better be paying attention, because people are getting exposed to this who've never seen it before. And now they're saying, this is pretty good. It is.
Yeah. And then the kind of reaction to that, or maybe, you know, offer an alternative, the Origami Experience 2 that was announced and shown off, and I went and had a demo of that today, and I think it worked quite nicely for me on my Samsung. Do you think it's enough, though, to keep life in the UMPC Windows market?
I don't know. You know, I really don't know the answer to that. To me, anything that in essence becomes a kind of a shell on top of the actual operating system kernel has always had difficulty, you know, in its implementation. And I'm not just talking about this. I'm talking about in general. We've always seen it when you try to put, like, the very first version of the Origami Experience, for example. You know, it was okay, but it was obviously stuck on top of the operating system. In fact, that's what a lot of people have complained about the tablet PC implementation in Windows, that it's actually just stuck. It's not integrated into the OS. It was, you know, it's on top of it. And so, you know, I'm not sure. I haven't really played with the Origami Experience 2. It looks like a bunch of widgets to me.
I saw that, yeah.
You know, I do think people will be happier with this version of it as opposed to the older version. It looks nice. It's cleaner. It's more fluid. It's a nice interface. And you mentioned widgets, and I blogged this the other day. Think of it as, you know, some of the Windows Sideshow gadgets that are, you know, just on your Today screen of your UMPC, for example. I mean, it's not, you don't have a Today screen, but same concept as throwing a skin on a Windows mobile device.
I mean, like, I noticed that it's got like an RSS reader in there that will play podcasts if they're embedded. And
calendar items.
Yeah, yep. And even the web browser UI has been tweaked just to work with touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice.
It looks nice,
will be happy. It's interesting because What that's telling me is people want that simple interface to the most used applications, and it does do that. But let's look at it from an operating system standpoint. Apply the same rule. People just want, you know, the functions that they're going to use. They don't need bloat, you know. That's the message I'm getting from acceptance of Origami Experience.
Yeah.
And Kevin is very familiar with what I have to say about that. 90% of what everyone does is using 10% of the functionality of any given device.
Yeah.
And so what these really intelligent Linux shells are doing is pulling that 10% and setting it right there. So 90% of your user experience is drop-dead simple and bulletproof. And that goes a long way. Apple has shown us that with the iPhone and the iPod Touch. They've shown us that. The interface works if people have a really positive experience using it. You know, and they can do almost everything they do. Yeah, you need the ability sometimes to go in around and do some stuff occasionally. But the key phrase there is occasionally.
Yeah.
We want to do the 90% of the stuff you need to do right here, drop dead simple. Push a button and you do it, you know, and it works.
I say that a lot. I say, you know, the iPhone may not do everything that a smartphone does, but what it does do, it does very well, and it's the functions that I need the most.
Yeah. I mean, from Media Center point of view, the listeners will well know, if you set a Media Center system up and just use it as a Media Center system, it's rock solid under Vista. If you then start, you know, adding things and playing about with plugins, and that's where the problems come in. So if you just do one thing well, then that's a good experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, it's been great chatting, great meeting up with you, and
our pleasure.
I enjoy listening to the podcasts that you do, so I'll include the links for them.
Mobile Tech Roundup.
What was that again?
.com. Mobile Tech Roundup.
Well, thanks, Ian.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the show again.
So
we'll see you around on the blogs.
All right.
Well, thanks to James and Kevin. It was great catching up with them at CES. It's always great when you follow someone through their blog and their podcast, and then you finally get to meet them. So on my final evening at CES, we had a Media Center show dinner. I took the microphone and the tablet PC with me and grabbed some interviews. Here's a selection of those interviews now. Well, I'm here at the Media Center dinner, and we've got a room, thanks to Paul from S1 Digital. And sat next to me, someone was upset with me because I didn't put his name in the blog post. But we'll sort that out now. So, Andrew Edney, welcome to the Media Center show and a live interview in person.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for having me.
So why were you upset with me?
Well, you just completely ignored me and didn't mention it. It was quite sad. I felt very hurt.
So, obviously, you're author of the Home Server book and Media Center books. What have you been looking at here? Have you been looking at Home Server stuff, Media Center stuff?
Yeah, I've been looking at the Home Server side of things. Obviously, with PowerPack 1 being announced this week, it's quite exciting. Been looking at the Media Center stuff that they're planning on doing. Having a bit look at the Blu-ray and HD DVD side of things this week. It's been kind of interesting.
So has anything stood out, or is it you like me where kind of there's not one thing that stood out?
Yeah, there's been a few things been quite interesting. The Samsung Dual HD DVD Blu-ray player looks quite exciting. Quality looks really good. But other than that, it's been a few little things here and there.
And there's someone here that's actually got a dual Media Center machine, and we were playing with that today, and that looks pretty good.
Excellent, yeah, it's looking really good.
I noticed the software kind of works, so in the previous, I've seen the Sony one, it kind of takes about 10 minutes to load it, so we're going to do an interview on that in a future show.
Oh, excellent, yeah, that'd be really good.
So, who else do you think we should talk to now? Terry Walsh. Now, we've already got you this week, but have you had more beer now than you had on Sunday evening, or less?
I've had less beer, but I'm hoping to improve on that position as the night wears on.
I think you need to. So, I asked you on Monday, you know, on Sunday evening, you know, what you're hoping to see. So have you seen what you were hoping to see?
So we saw the PP1 announcement this week with Windows Home Server, which I think has generated a lot of excitement within the community. I think there's a lot of features that are coming through in there in terms of external backup and in terms of an improved remote access experience that the communities have been asking for quite a few months now. And I think Microsoft have heard that. They've had the time and the resource to now execute in that. And we'll see that, you know, in the first half of the year. And there's a lot of people who are kind of very excited about receiving those bits. And, you know, it really adds value to the Windows Home Server experience. I think then in terms of the show, I think for me, in terms of what I've seen, is that this for me really seems to be the year of the connected home. And we're seeing a lot of connected devices and a lot of network devices, be that the V2 extender, be that through different digital media receivers, be that digital photo frames even, that are all sitting within the home. And I think the big question will be, what infrastructure will those connected devices sit on in the future? You know, and I think Windows Home Server is ideally placed to benefit from that. I think increasingly we're seeing a lot of people that I've spoken to this week at the show are very interested in Home Server. They want to support Home Server. And I think the more that the Home Server ecosystem starts to develop in the future, I think there's exciting things to come.
I saw in the Microsoft, I think it was a Microsoft Pavilion, they had a Denon AV receiver that was certified for Vista and could stream straight from something like Home Server.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think we're seeing from Denon, we're seeing a lot more connected devices. They're putting Ethernet ports now in a lot of their devices. And it's, you know, I have a lot of Denon equipment at home, and I think they're fantastic. And I think plugging into the ecosystem, I think it's going to be great for them, and I think it's great for the category too.
Okay, well, it's been great to meet up both of you, so to see you in person, and we'll probably talk to you again on a future show.
I think it's your round, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, so who am I going to get now? I'm going to go talk to Jessica Gazelle. So how have you found it on being on the booth this week?
Oh, it's so much fun. My voice sounds terrible because I've been talking so much, but it's great to talk about our product all week.
And have you had a lot of interest? You had a lot of people coming through?
Yeah, it's been really busy. We've had a lot of people come through.
Well, what kind of things are they asking you about? Have they seen Media Center before?
No, I think a majority haven't seen Media Center before. So we're doing basic demos explaining what the product does and how it works together with other Microsoft products.
And you obviously got the extenders on the stand this year. Has that generated a lot of interest?
Yeah, it's actually, at first they look at the booths and they say, well, why is there a PC and a router and what's that device? And they don't understand what it is. And once we explain the whole story, it's really compelling. They get that you can have your PC in your office and then have your extender in your living room where your TV is, and that sounds great to them.
And so have you had any like awkward questions and awkward people coming up to the stand giving you any problems?
I had maybe one or two where they didn't think that as a woman I could actually answer the question. But, you know, I just smiled. One of them I had to turn my back and be like, okay, I'm done with you. I'm not going to answer your question anymore. And I've had quite a few say to me, so do you actually work on the product? And I don't think they're asking the men in the booth whether they work on the product.
Yeah, I guess it's that kind of thing. They can kind of think you're some kind of PR person.
Maybe, or, you know, there are women all over the place who are paid to be here and hand out brochures, right? Not necessarily tech owners, and, you know, I'm a tech.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it's great to have someone from the actual eHome team working. You know, it's not just a PR person on there. You've got actually someone from the product team. So have you got any feedback from anybody that you think you could, like, take back to the team?
I have. Let's see. We're hearing about people wanting to integrate more of their internet content, like, for example, YouTube videos or whatever, into Media Center. They want to know how to do that. They want more codec support in Media Center. We've heard quite a few times, how do I get my satellite signal into Media Center? And as you know, today we have to do it via set-top box, so they definitely are interested in solutions with satellite providers. I've had quite a few understand that they can do digital cable in Media Center, but that it requires a purchase of a new PC, and, you know, they're not really psyched about that either.
It's been pretty good. You've enjoyed being on the stand.
I have. It's fun.
Well, it's great to meet you in person. I've been on the show a couple of times, and hopefully we'll get you on the show again in the future.
All right. Sounds great.
Stephen Hughes, I just got to grab you before you leave. So how have you found the CES this time?
It was okay. I mean, there could have been a little bit more things on the floor. Everyone always had more flash, but I think it was the little things that went ashore. Everyone's saying the buzzword for the show was it's not a revolution, it's an evolution. So we've seen little things like the Link 6 extenders, which is really cool. Some of the cool new speaker technology from NXT, which was really nice with the flat panel technology. We're going to post up some video on that. And the next home was one of the nice things, I thought.
Next gen home, yeah.
And it was great that they actually had four homes here as opposed to one, so actually everyone could see it. Which was nice.
It's quite good, the scenarios they got in there. They've kind of got it real world. I mean, it's a bit over the top, but it's still real world.
Oh, yeah. It was nice. It was a nice feature. They had the vignettes when the actors, you know, go through the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. It was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, so you're heading off now, aren't you?
Yeah, we've got to go jump on a plane and head back.
Oh, well, it's been great to meet up with you again.
Okay, we'll talk a bit later, all right?
Yeah.
All right.
Ted Singh, most people know you now, but a regular guest on the show, and you had your M-Control software up on the Cisco booth. They were showing it off on the media center on the extenders, so that must be pretty good seeing that on there.
Yeah, what we did is we worked with Cisco to show how our control software could run on a media center PC, but also on their new extenders. But in additionally, it could talk to their new cameras that they're bringing out, which are IP-based cameras. And you could see them on the media center PC, on the extender, and then also remotely as well. So it's sort of like bringing everything together.
Well, it's the first time I think I've seen 2.1 in action with security cameras and everything. It's changed quite a bit, hasn't it, since version 2?
Yeah, we've added quite a few things. And people can try out 2.1. It's available on our forum. All you have to do is a registered guest to try out beta 2. But one of the things we've added is a lot more features, including Sideshow, including a control of AV devices like your projectors, your TVs, your receivers. So all that stuff is now coming together in M-Control. And now you can, it's not just lights and the HVAC anymore. It's much, much more integrated.
So how can it control a projector? What can it do with that?
Okay, so most projectors have some way of taking some command information either through the IR or through a serial port or some IP ports, and we have the ability to send commands over IR, over serial or IP ports. And what we've done is we've created these XML files for every different kind of device, and if your device isn't supported, you can create your own XML file for your particular device, which allows you to control your, you know, maybe your receiver in the home. So now what you can do is you can, when you flick on your media center switch, you can get it to do a lot more things afterwards, including set up your TV perhaps.
Right, yeah, so it's like a macro thing where you can say, turn the TV on, the receiver, you know, dim the lights, and you can do the whole thing. But yes. I suppose a lot of people don't have the automated blinds, but the kind of things like turning your projector on or turning your receiver on is something that's practical.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, things like just automatically setting the source of your TV to the proper, VGA, DVI, or HDMI, and controlling your set-top box so you can quickly switch between, your different setups that you might have. And then, you know, one of the other things we've added is we've made our software, we've translated it to 10 different languages, so now we've opened up the door to more and more use in Europe and Asia.
Yeah, because you've got like a developer thing, haven't you, where you can sort of do plugins, and you mentioned like the XML file, so if something's not supported, say, you know, something you don't do over here in the US, if it's in the UK, you could, you know, come with your own driver for that.
Right, actually, in one of our European partners, Techniska Brien, what they did is they developed a driver for the KNX protocol, which is perhaps top protocol in mainland continental Europe for controlling HVAC and lighting.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's great seeing you up on the stand there, and I was up with Linksys today, and obviously they didn't know that I knew you, but still they demoed the software, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we knew that we were going to be in several locations, but it was nice to see, you know, sometimes you don't know where the art software is going to end up.
Well, it's great to meet you again, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks very much, Ian.
I'm now here with Paul from S1 Digital, and Paul very kindly funded the room tonight where all these people are enjoying their dinner. So, how are you finding the CES for you?
No comment.
And have you got any announcements to make?
No comment.
You see, this is a problem you get when you interview someone that's from Australia.
I can neither confirm nor deny that fact.
So, have you brought any kit with you this week, or are you just kind of here just to see what's on show?
I brought kit, but I can't tell you about it.
Thanks. Normally, they're not a tough crowd, media center interviews, so, you know.
No, we can't afford to do anything here. And if we had a booth here, it'd be in the middle of 1,000 other booths, and no one would be able to find us, and it'd be a waste of our money. So we'll concentrate on EHX and Cedia, and we do other little shows. We did a show last month. I think we talked about it.
Yeah.
And, CES is just for networking at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
We do a lot of networking at 3 a.m. in the morning here.
That's what you call it, yeah. Well, mate, thanks for providing the room for us tonight. That's pretty cool.
No comment. No problem, no. We had fun. So if anyone else wants to come down next year, we'll make sure we get a bigger room because we really couldn't fit into this room.
Well, at least we got the room eventually.
Yeah, I tell you what, if any of your listeners are listening and they want to have a really good time, they've got to come down to CES in January 2009, and I'll make sure, I'll guarantee that they have a good time.
Right, we'll hold you to that.
All right, please do. Well,
it's great getting you down here. It's great to get you on the show again.
All righty.
I'm here with Adam Finch now from One Voice, and One Voice has been a great supporter of the show, and I really appreciate that. And the whole digitallifestyle.com, and you've got the banner ads on there, and you know, part of the reason why I'm here today in CS is because of the help that you give me doing the show. But it's actually the first time you've been on the show, and Dean's been on a few times. So you were on the Intel stand. So what kind of stuff have you got on there?
We're really excited, actually, out of the show. Intel has selected One Voice to demonstrate voice recognition technology on their MID devices, which is the mobile internet devices. It's really great because, you know, as these devices are getting smaller and smaller, like the Q1 that I know that you use and some of the other devices, it gets much smaller, but more and more content. And you don't always have the keyboard, you don't always have the mouse, and voice is just a really natural input for that. So we're really excited to be demonstrating the voice control for playing music or even doing location-based services. Think Find Me the Cheapest Gas Within 10 Miles and having that information come right up. And what's really exciting about that, too, is, you know, just being able to do that. And you know, when you want to have voice recognition on those kind of devices, they have to work, and they have to work really well. Without speech training, the user experience has to be incredible and has to work right out of the box. And that's where One Voice Technologies really excels on that, as you know, and has tried yourself. So we're able to demonstrate that also in the booth in, you know, on the CES floor. It can be an incredibly ambient noise environment. We've got speakers going. And when we're able to simply say, One Voice, play the Beatles, and it happens, and then hand that device right over to anybody from around the world with any accent, and then be able to do the same thing, it's been really exciting. So it's a really exciting time for us and voice technology.
So what's people's reaction like when you do that? Because most people think of you know, voice control as like some kind of, you know, reading a book training program that you've got to do on Vista or XP or something. So what's the reaction like when you just hand it them? Like,
actually, that's a really great thing, and it's what people have seen when they come to the booth and they say, oh, voice recognition, well, you're not showing it at the show, we understand. No, we are showing it, you know, here, try it, and it works for them. Oh, well, it only works for Adam's voice. No, it'll work for your voice too. And when people see that and they see that it works for them and it works the first time, they know that the market's ready and they're ready to have that, whether it be in an ultra mobile device in their hand, in their vehicle, or in the digital home, which we've had with the Media Center product.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the uses in the car are just obvious. You can just control your whole entertainment system through, you know, when you can't really get your hands on a mouse and while you're driving.
Absolutely. And, you know, we actually have a new partner, Street Tech, which we are really excited to be working with. They have an aftermarket software platform for the in-car, which is just incredible. They got a great UI. And being able to click through your music, whether it be with touchscreen or using your voice. And that's where it's really great, because when you're driving down the road, you can't be typing through that BlackBerry for your emails. You can't be scrolling through your MP3 player. You just say, play ZZ Top, and your music's playing for you right away.
You mentioned that you're working on the mids, and obviously on the Samsung, you know, that's running Windows Vista, so I can, you know, see that you're using your existing technology for that. But then what about these small devices, because they're running Linux?
Actually, the Q1 we're demonstrating in the booth is running on Linux. We've got Ubuntu running on that one, less looking at Red Flag. So we have ported it over to Linux, so our technology is ported over for that as well for the MIDs in the Intel booth.
So that means you can run on the really tiny devices?
Absolutely, and that's absolutely what we're saying. You know, these devices are getting smaller, the content's getting more, and voice is just the way that you're going to be able to talk to these devices and interact with them. You know, it's a multimodal thing, and we've always seen it that way. Sometimes it's easier to type. You know, when Media Center, for example, we've always said you're not going to say volume up, volume up, volume up. But if you want to play music, say ZZ Top, without clicking music or scrolling to the bottom, or, you know, during a slideshow, play this slideshow and then put music right over it for an amazing user experience, but once again, without any voice training.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's one of those things you've got to really see it to
to believe that it actually does work, because I think a lot of people are skeptical of voice technology.
It really is, and that's where it's really great at the Intel booth. And also, just when I talk to a lot of people, we heard about your software, but it's voice recognition. Well, but when they see it, when they get it hands-on and they try it, they really see that not only does it work, but it works really well, and even noisy environments. And then they say, wow, this is something I really want to have in my home. This is something that I'm really, it's ready to use now.
Well, that's excellent, and I really appreciate the support that One Voice do for the show and for the community, and it's great to see your stuff on the Intel stand.
Oh, well, it's great. It's great to be on the show. We really appreciate the Media Center show. Love it, and having a great time here at CES.
So that's it for CES 2008. It's been great covering it. Have a look at all the videos. I may have one more video just to go out, but that's it for the interviews. We're back with regular interviews next week. The Media Center Show Awards, I'm going to be recording that fairly soon, and that'll be out in a couple of weeks. I appreciate all the feedback that you sent for the CES coverage. I'm glad you enjoyed the videos and the podcast and the blog. The email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'll see you around on the site and on the Facebook group, and see you next week. Bye. We'll be right back.